My name's Chip. I'm an alcoholic.
Chip.
Boy, it's good to be here. I got a sponsor. His name is Tim Highland from Louisville. I got corrected when I said Louisville. It's Louisville, Kentucky. And Tim has a sponsor by the name of Don, who's doing well, recovering from his in and out of his cancer bouts. I get to sponsor people. But more importantly, I want to tell you that at 35 years, 7 months, and 2 days, I'm still sponsorable. And that is an art form in Alcoholics Anonymous. I got a home group. My home group is called Busters for Sobriety. Woo-hoo. If you're ever in the little fishing village of Destin, come down and see us. We meet every single morning at 8 o'clock in the morning at a bar called Jackaroota's. And people say, you meet every day of the week? We're like, yeah, because we need to. The Destin police appreciate it. For the most part, the families appreciate it. And I got a great home group. We are. If you ever go to Disney World and you look up the meeting Friends of Bill W., it's kind of a vicarious meeting because there's people all around the world coming to Disney World. And all the A's and Al-Anons will go to Friends of Bill W. And what happens at that meeting every noon is that they simply open up with the preamble, the preface, they go through the steps and they go through the traditions, and then they say, and you're the speaker. And you don't know what you're getting, if it's German, if it's Swedish, from people all around the world. And in Destin, we get the people that love to come to our beach and love to come to the fishing village. And so we have a lot of visitors that come see us. And we've always been no more than 34 feet 7 inches from liquor. Our initial Buster's home group was in Buster's Oyster Bar in Miramar Beach, and then it had to move because Fred sold the bar, and then it moved to La Paz Mexican Cantina. Yep, and then during COVID they had to remodel, then it moved to Callahan's Steakhouse and Bar, and then it had to move because they sold Callahan's. Now we were at Jackaroota's Bar and Bistro. Never more than 34 feet, 7 inches from alcohol. And it's amazing when the new people come in because you have to try to refocus them all the time because it's like, top shelf. So no, dude, you were not top shelf, believe me. So I have no reason for Chris. I don't know if this is your first time through Alcoholics Anonymous. It was not my first time through Alcoholics Anonymous. But welcome here. And I will tell you that... When I got here, I had a lot of questions. Do we have people that are here, raise your hand again, less than a year? If you're working through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, my story jumps, there's no campus. It's not a military presentation. There's no PowerPoint or red laser pointing to the steps or traditions. There'll be no test at 8 o'clock. So, if you're going through the big book, like I went through the big book, I came up with all that. I was 32 years old. I come out of a nut ward. I had no reason to be an alcoholic, and I was fighting every moment of it. I was always looking for a way out. So I went to the old people thinking that they were that old, they were forgetting what it was like to be new. And I said, I don't understand about all this stuff, about all this. I got questions. You know, if you ever listen to Steve L. from Nashville, he talked about, I got questions about the questions that you're asking me questions on. I was just confused. I didn't have any reason to be an alcoholic. There's nothing in my family history that negates me to be an alcoholic. I needed to know, but I had these questions I needed to have answered. And for the people that are new, I want to tell you exactly how I got my questions answered. I went and I talked to them. I said, I realize that you guys don't want me to drink. I'm in an AA meeting. You don't want me to drink. But I need to know, what am I going to do about the family? And you heard it this morning. In the big book, there's a chapter, and the chapter is called The Family Afterwards. And Chip, we hope you read it. And then if you got any questions, then you come ask me. I said, well, what do I do about those? What do I do about the wife? And they said, Chip, we got a big book. And in the big book, there's a chapter to the wives. We hope you read it. And then if you got a question, you come ask me. I said, what do I do about my job? They said, Chip, we got a big book. And in the big book, there's a chapter called To the Employers. It describes everything about you and them. We hope you read it. And if you got any questions, you come ask me. I said, oh, what am I going to do about this thing about God? What about the way I was raised? And they said, Chip, we got a big book. And in the big book, notice a pattern happening? There's a chapter called To the Agnostic. We hope that you read it. And I said, what's going to happen to me? I don't know what's going to happen to me. They said, Chip, we got a big book. There's a chapter called A Vision for You. It was over and over and over. How am I going to know if I'm an alcoholic, Chip? We got a big book. There's a chapter called More About Alcoholism. And the reason I tell you that if you're new is because my sponsor never told me what to do about my wife. He never told me what to do about my job. Never told me what to do about my bank account, although I asked him later on. Never told me what to do about the kids. Never told me what to do about anything. What he did was he told me where the answers were. He wanted me to read it, and then if I had questions. I didn't get the Evelyn Woods speed reading course of Alcoholics Anonymous. They had me read the big book and then come and ask them questions because I was a little fighter. I didn't know if I was an alcoholic or not. I had all these different reasons. I had the typical resume of why I was not an alcoholic. That was my, you know, Robert Downey Jr. with his Iron Man costume. You come near me about the word alcohol, and all of a sudden, the armor starts coming on. Auto defense mechanism. You are not going to talk to me about my drinking. And for most people, and I'm sure for most of y'all, nobody knew. It was a secret. Except for people that I hang out with. You know, they said, that's what my sponsor would say. Yep, said the moment that I admitted I was an alcoholic, the whole neighborhood stood up and said, it's uniform now. It's unanimous. I didn't know that I was an alcoholic or not. I didn't know that everything that I was doing was drinking alcoholically. I was acting alcoholically. I was behaving alcoholically because I didn't know anything about alcoholism. I came here in the dark. I took my third trip to the emergency room on the 26th of April, 1987. It's not my sobriety date. 26th of April, 1987, third trip to the emergency room. And I learned a couple of different things in that moment. That those three children, they were 11, 10, and 8 years old, were sitting in the waiting room. And my wife at the time, which is a whole another chapter, was sitting there at the receptionist desk where the medical technicians were in the emergency room. And I was in the back. And they were pumping me full of nitroglycerin again, trying to get my blood pressure maintained. I'm 32 years old. I cannot be an alcoholic. I got stripes, man. I got medals hanging. I got ribbon. I got all kinds of colors. I cannot be an alcoholic. I am a military man. And what I heard going on was out there inside the lobby area was this. She says, you have got to do something with him. And they said, man, we're doing everything that we can. We are detoxing him in the back room back there. I had, you know, they said, we'll talk to you in a general way. What we used to be like. I had stuff coming out of every orifice. And they were trying to get me stabilized. And she was out there yelling and raising her voice. And she said, you don't understand. And they said, man, what do we don't? We got him in the back. She said, he has done this 100 times before. And if you don't lock him up, he will do it 100 times again until he's dead. And I didn't know that that's called the family disease of alcoholism. How my drinking affected everybody else. And then the magic statement said, you know, because I'm listening. I'm paying attention. I'm puking, but I am paying attention, right? And then the next statement he said was, man, we have to stabilize him before we take him to the mental ward. And I'm like, bing! Mental ward? That was never brought up the last two times. And so they marched me upstairs, and I received my new military uniform after they stabilized me. Some of y'all know it's the foamy slippers, the little pinstripe pajamas, and the little squishy robe. But what they did worse to me was they put this little plastic bracelet around me, and it said alcoholic. You might as well have put a neon sign on my forehead going, loser, loser. I had no idea what an alcohol. All I knew was that they were taking my clothes. I ended up in a fetal position up there in what they called the solitude room. That's where they detox the people. They were pumping me full of Xanax. So now I'm sitting here, and for 10 days I stayed in that place. And I told them every day I got better and better and better. And I said, I don't need to be here anymore. And they said, you don't need to be here anymore? I said, no, I'm feeling perfectly fine. Thank you very much. And they said, you realize you get medication every 4 hours. And I'm like, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They said, you realize every 3 hours and 45 minutes you're at the nurse's desk going, it's almost time. Because it was wearing off. And I had nothing to cope with until the next bout came with the medication. And they were slowly tapering me off this medication. Long story short, I signed a whole long checklist that my commander made me sign to be able to get out of there. I told him, I said, I'm in charge of 600 people. They're lonely without me. I'm their boss. He let me out of there. I had to go to all these different functions that I had to go to. And they weren't fun functions. They were outpatient alcohol therapy. I had to go to marriage counseling in the military. I had to, before Jack Nicholson, I had to go to anger management. And I'm like, I ain't it. You know, I was a little intense. They thought it was anger. I was just intense. You know, when bullets are flying, you yell duck, 600 people have to duck at one time. You got to get their attention. That 10-year-old said, Dad, you can leave those stripes at the door. They don't work inside. And they didn't. They let me out of there. And what they did was they patted me on the back and they said, Commander said, make sure you go to those A&A meetings. And I did. And I was gonna, I would tell you that I was not a court card. So I was not a court card carrying guy. But my commander made sure I got attendance slip signed. So I went to meeting after meeting after meeting for 6 months and 3 days. The Air Force thought I did a great job. They said, you're going to take these people. We're going to fly you out to Victorville, California, to George Air Force Base. We have a flying mission out there. And so I said, okay. So I took these crew chiefs with me. Now I'm the boss. That came out of the nut ward, right? I'm still a little bit intense. I have no alcohol that I can function with at all. And now I'm getting a little more intense. Because I'm going to AA meetings, but I'm not working any steps. And if you would ask me what I was doing, I would tell you steps. I'm on step 3. That's always the perfect answer. You don't have to describe how you... Well, I did step 1 perfectly, 100%. You can't question me on that. And step 2, came to believe, I believe. So what are you doing with step 3? I'm getting ready to turn my will and my life over to carry. I'm getting ready. It's the perfect answer to get them off your back. So I took off, went to Victorville, California. I was supposed to go to an intergroup breakfast because the guy that was my sponsor ended up being my sponsor for 28 years, got sober in Long Beach, California, so he knew everybody out there. They said, well, go ahead and get you a ticket. You can sit at the, we'll save you a seat at the intergroup breakfast. You show up. But you are way up there on the plateau, and we are way down here in Long Beach. I'm like, I'm willing to go to any length. Besides, I'm in charge, and I have the rental car. To zoom through this entire story, when that meeting was going on, I had blown right past that meeting, hit the Pacific Coast Highway, went north, and when they were having a meeting, we were drinking at the end of the Santa Barbara Yacht Club pier. Did you offer any defense against the first drink? I'm like, I couldn't stand being sober. Why would I offer a defense against the first drink? What I had done was took myself out of the safe environment and promised them that I wouldn't drink, just like I had done over and over and over again. And I came back 3 days later because the military said I had to come back. And I had called that wife long distance on the phone from the hotel room, Adelanto Hotel, room 222. And I said, I have been drinking and waited. There was no loud screaming. There was no crying over the phone. And then she said, would you go back to AA? I'm like, don't you want to talk about my drinking and why I drank? She said, would you go back to AA? What I didn't realize was because I was occupying a seat every night, something was beginning to happen that I didn't realize. And if, you know, Dr. Bob's son Smitty would always say, don't leave 5 minutes before the miracle happens. And they told me, they said, you probably left 5 minutes before the miracle happens. You see, I only missed one meeting, the one meeting I had promised to have been at. If I'd have been at that meeting, the story might have got different. So I came back to after 3 days of drinking, and I tried to explain to them why they didn't care why I drank. I told them, you want to go get you? Let's go to the meeting tonight. You can go get a new chip again, a new white chip. And I'm like, oh, no. I am not going to a meeting in my hometown and let them see me get one of them chips again. Let's go down to Valparaiso. We'll go to a meeting way down there 30 miles away, and I'll go ahead and get a newcomer chip. Well, I didn't realize it, but evidently everybody in Crestview, Florida decided to go to Valparaiso that night. I wasn't important if they put the news out, believe me. So I went down there, and there's all these people I know. I'm like, oh, busted. So I thought when the meeting, when they went to the chips, I was going to go up, and I was going to get my newcomer chip again. And they were all going to go, loser. And I have to go through the AA whipping line. And you know what they did? They just welcomed me back in. That's what I love about going to conventions and roundups and whoopee parties, and you have these countdowns. Because this is what I've learned through my 35 years, 7 months, and 2 days, right? If you noticed, when the longest time got the applause, and then Chris stood up for the least amount of time, the applause meter was the same. And that's called Alcoholics Anonymous. The highest rank you get here is sober, not speaker. You don't go to any type of special school for sponsorship. There's no extended studies. You don't go to any speaker circuit. The highest rank, all we are just members of Alcoholics Anonymous, who was asked to tell a story. And I can tell you that I dropped over with another heart attack, they would simply say, "Eric, kick him out of the way. You tell your story." Everybody has a story. There's no soul saving going on here. You just simply have to tell your story. But I can tell you that my story, and I've heard a lot of stories, my story is the most powerful I've ever heard. Because I can't stay sober on Eric's story, or Heather's story, or Bob's story, or Jim's story, or Brandon's story. I can only stay sober because I felt mine. I can listen to yours, but I vibrated through mine. These ain't wrinkles, this is scar tissue. High-speed windshields. So, and sponsorship. Why didn't you listen? So I went up to the old timer. I went up to the old timer and I said, "What do I do?" He said, "What do you mean, what do you do?" I said, "I'm not sure if I'm an alcoholic or not." Because I had read just enough in the big book where I saw that magic statement, "For us to drink again is to die." And I said, "The big book lied." He said, "What do you mean it lied?" I said, "It said for me to drink again is to die. I drank again and here I am." He said, "They didn't mean right now." So what do you mean? He said, "Like Clancy described it, a little clock starts ticking in your head. That's called a time bomb. And if you continue drinking, nobody knows when it's going to happen." And I said, "Well, what do I do if I said, "I'm 33 years old now, and I'm really not sure." This is the first honest thing I ever told him. "I'm really not sure if I'm an alcoholic or not." That's when you start, you're waiting. They're going to throw something at you. I thought that I had to be completely smashed. Who was saying that earlier? We were talking about being smashed. I had to be completely smashed in order to earn my seat in Alcoholics Anonymous. I said, I had to be beaten down so far that there is no other option for me to be able to sit in my seat and go, "That's my seat in Alcoholics Anonymous." He said, "Who told you that?" I said, I heard it somewhere in an open discussion meeting. He said, "Oh, open discussion meetings." He said, "Well, was it actually a big book open discussion meeting? Was it saying along the format of Alcoholics Anonymous, or was it one of them meetings?" And I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Well, get the tissues because I got issues." And I'm like, I said, I wanted to talk about my problems, right? I said, I'm not sure. He said, let's see what Bill Wilson thought about that. And if you think about it, 13 years later, we were talking about this earlier. Bill Wilson wrote this magic book called The Big Book. And then on page 164 that a lot of us always quote and read, it says, "We realize we know only a little. More will constantly be revealed." 13 years later, in the preface of the 12 and 12, and I'm going to paraphrase it. See, I thought I had to be beaten down and accept step one and then move on to stop this thought about drinking. You can't be a good AA member if you're still thinking about drinking. He took me to where it said the truth. It said, "These 12 steps, spiritual in their nature, are designed that if practiced as a way of daily life," here it comes, "can expel the obsession to drink." That's like voodoo crap. Where did that come from? He said, "Chip, the 12 steps are designed to expel the obsession to drink." I said, "Well, Bill Wilson got this hot flash at Towns Hospital. I ain't got no hot flash. The cool, clean, crisp wind is blowing across the top of the mountain. This was the God of the elders." I said, I still got this thing on the back of my shoulder. It says, "If it gets bad enough, dude, take a drink. You got to have some relief right now. And you can always come back tomorrow." No, you can't. How many people have y'all seen people die in Alcoholics Anonymous? That door does not always swing both ways. He said, "So, Chip," he said, "these 12 steps are designed to expel that obsession to drink." I said, "Well, Bill Wilson didn't have to do that. He got that before he ever took this." He said, "Let's go." He said, "Did you read the stories in the back of the book?" I'm like, "Well, I was in an open discussion meeting, and I heard them say that the stories in the back are nothing but entertainment. The whole program of Alcoholics Anonymous resides in the first 164 pages. He said, "Man." He said, "If you went to the very first story in the back of the book, who would that be?" The co-founder of Alcoholics Anonymous. "If you went to the second story in the back of the book, who would that be?" Bill Dotson, alcoholic number 3. He said, "Do you think there's a reason they might be in the back of the book so guys like you would go to the back of the book to try and read?" And I said, "Well, I don't." He said, "I want you to read Dr. Bob's story." And he didn't tell me why. And I read through that whole story looking for answers until I got to the far end of Dr. Bob's story. I'm still sitting here thinking about drinking in AA meetings, trying to figure out, do I keep working these steps or do I have to stay focused on step one, right? And in Dr. Bob's story, he says, he starts talking about the four reasons why he never left, right? But he says, although I did not get over my craving for liquor for the first 2.5 years, and I'm like, when did they put that in there? He said, you didn't read the stories in the back of the book. And I'm like, man. So you don't know how to master fear. You don't know how to do all this. These are all in the stories in the back of the book, right? When Heather got up there, when she was introducing, I think, Becky, right? She talked about what we're supposed to do in our stories. And Bill Wilson put the instructions right in the manual on what we're supposed to do when we get up and tell our stories. On page 29, right? Each individual in the personal stories describes in his own language and from his own point of view the way he established his relationship with God. But it doesn't say puking. But we qualify by talking about in a general way what we were like, what happened, and what we are like today. So I was lucky enough to have this guy that I'm going to give a 57-year medallion to in September. Give it to me the way that, without a high school education, floor layer by trade, got tired of laying floors because his knee gave out, so he opened a tire store, right? So I'm learning all about God from a tire salesman and a floor layer. And he started to spoon feed me the stuff that I needed to hear. I said, I still don't understand about this thing of whether I am or I am not an alcoholic, right? And he said, why don't we go to the people that you can understand? He said, save up your money. I'm going to take you to Palm Springs. And I'm like, California? I've heard about California, AA. He said, yeah, save up your money. I'm not paying for your ticket. Save up your money. So I got my ticket saved up, and I went out to Palm Springs, and he took me to Mac Brewster. He got sober with Mac Brewster in 1966, right? So I went and talked to Mac. I'm a year and a half sober. And I'm walking around behind Mac, and we're at the swimming pool at the Desert Marriott Resort, right? You take a gondola to your restaurant. And I'm thinking, I come out of a nut ward. Now I'm getting in a gondola. And Mac says, Chip, you're not sure if you're an alcoholic or when you became one. I said, I need to know when. I mean, what was I doing? How many stripes did I have? What wife was it? Did I have children at the time? What job was I doing? You know, where was I located? He said, Chip, if you're anything like me, you probably became an alcoholic when you quit bragging about how much booze you drank and started lying about how much you really did. And I said, oh. And then I started being able to listen, as the book describes, as only the dying can hear. And then I would start to listen to people say, I drank just enough alcohol for the I don't give a darn light to come on. And I knew when that came on. And I would listen to Cliff Roach talk about it. Cliff Roach would say, I never drank for the effect. I drank for the effect 8 minutes and 40 seconds later when it hit. Boom. All the nuts and bolts would tighten down. You get that warm, flush feeling all over you. Man, I can deal with anything now. Guilt went away. Fear went away. Everything went away. The more you drank, the more the magic was. And I said, that's why I drank. He said, I said, well, I don't know. What do we do about this staying sober stuff? He said, well, Chip. He said, you're worried about staying sober. I said, well, what am I going to do? He said, well, Chip, if you're not an alcoholic, staying sober will not bother you. But even the Al-Anons know if you are an alcoholic, it's going to get real. It's going to get different. And then it's going to get real different. Yeah. Your mind's going to start talking to you at 2 o'clock in the morning when the shadow people are coming alive. Yeah, y'all heard the shadow people. I would see those things moving in the blinds of the windows, and I'm thinking, they're looking through the window. And it was branches, but, all this stuff started happening. The one that cemented to me the first step, because I want to talk to you about the rest of them real quick, and then tell you what I'm doing, right? What really cemented it for me was I had a home group member with red hair. Her name was Rose. She was 12 years sober. Rose got up to the podium, and I had these three little children, and I had that wife. Rose got up there and said, alcohol gave me a license to act in an unsociable manner and excuse it off by saying, I am so sorry. I would have never done that if I hadn't been drinking. And I remembered how many times I had told that to my children. I'm sorry I wasn't there to show up for your game. I'm sorry I wasn't there for your... I'm sorry. If I hadn't have been drinking, I would have been there. Over and over and over again. And then I fully understood what they were talking about. And I knew by a shadow of a doubt that I was occupying my seat as a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous sitting in Alcoholics Anonymous meetings. I went on to this big liturgy because I was a fighter, right? I wanted to fight every single one of these steps. Like, you need to give me clear, tangible evidence. I needed a checklist like a military tech order. But I had a checklist that when I got done, he could check the box. I needed to see. I could take my little recovery chart and I could look at my progress on it. I said, I don't understand this thing about the second step. Came to believe in a power greater than myself. He said, you got any problem with God? I'm like, no, not really. I was raised in a parochial school. My parents made sure I went to church when I was little. I had no problem. I knew about this thing called God. He said, what is your problem? I said, I know what you want me to admit. I seen that last word in the second step. You want me to admit I am insane. He said, where did you hear that? I love open discussion meetings. I go to a lot of them. My home group is an open discussion meeting. But it stays within the confines of the literature. And we listen to the people that had the experience, young and old, of how they went through the steps and how it applied to their lives. Exactly your story, right? So I said, you want me to admit I'm insane? He said, where did you get that from? I said, look, it says, came to believe power of God can restore me to sanity. Therefore, you think I'm insane. He said, let's see what Bill Wilson wanted. We go back to the manual again, right? It's like I wrote in Chris's book. I hope the answers to all your problems lie between the two blue pages of the big book. And I'm like, there's no blue pages. He said, yes, there is. The covers, right? So I went through this thing. I said, Bill Wilson, you want me to admit I'm insane? He said, so, big book, page 36. Here it goes. He had much knowledge about himself. You know who we're talking about, Jim the Milkman, right? Had much knowledge about himself as an alcoholic, yet all reasons for not drinking were easily pushed aside and the foolish idea that he could take whiskey if he only mixed it with milk. Now here comes, whatever the precise definition of the word may be, we call this plain insanity. Four sentences down. The insanely trivial excuse for taking the first drink. The insane idea won out. Our justification for a spree was insanely, I said, enough. So he made me highlight it in pink. Right? Gets my attention. Now I knew what Bill Wilson was talking about. You know, the book always describes it. It says, we are perfectly normal, most of us, in every respect, except when it comes to alcohol. When it comes to alcohol, we are strangely insane. And nobody knows why, except other alcoholics and Al-Anons. I said, let's go on to the third step. I went on to the third step. I knew exactly what you want me to do. You want me to go open the book, recite this prayer, because I read the book. I got this prayer in here. I'm going to recite this prayer, page 63. But I don't want them kids hearing me pray, especially the wife. So, I don't know how many of y'all did it. You go into the bathroom, lock yourself into the bathroom, and the acoustics are really echoing in the bathroom. You turn on the faucets. That ain't enough, because I have a deep voice. I turn on the shower, and I recite that prayer. God, I offer myself to thee, da-da-da. Boom, I'm done. And what did Will talk about when it says, now we launched on a course of vigorous action, we're going to start taking our inventory, right? That's when he said, you're going to have to start doing this thing. Remember that little third step prayer that I just did. I went and I took my inventory, I did everything that I thought I was supposed to do, I ended up doing a fifth step, was completely afraid of doing a fifth step. I am here to testify, if anybody has any questions whatsoever, the steps were never designed to hurt anybody. They are not painful. I make them painful. Because I fight. And that's my defense mechanism. The steps were designed to heal, not to hurt. Right? So I went through and I'm working all these steps and stuff like that. I go, and life was rocking on. All of a sudden this guy asked me to sponsor him. And I'm like, I can't sponsor you, dude. I got seven months and a couple of days more than you. So I ran to the old timer. I said, what do I do? He said, he's just asking you to sponsor him. See, I remember this guy, when I had about a year sober, so this guy, I love talking about sponsorship. This guy asked me to sponsor him, right? And I'm like, oh, man, wait a minute. Because I'm holding the guy's life in the clutches of my hands. So I said, let me go ask the guru. So I asked the guru, and I said, what do I do? And he said, just say yes, Chip. And I said, okay. But I didn't ask him how to do it, right? Remember, what do I do about sponsorship, Chip? We have a big book, and in the big book there's a chapter called Working with Others. I didn't read that one, right? I didn't ask him any questions either. So I told that guy, I said, meet me at McDonald's at 7 o'clock, right? He didn't have to ask where I was at. If you would have walked in McDonald's that day in 1988, you would have seen the altar of AA. That guy walked in, and I had gone to the central office and bought every piece of literature, every book that I could afford, right? And I had the altar. I was moving tables around. This guy walks in and looks, and he sits right across from me, and I'm like, yeah, dude, we're doing it all. We're going to read every book, take every step, pray every prayer and stuff. And I'm like, I'm here to tell you, from that moment to this, I have never seen that man drink again. I've never seen him sober either. I've never seen him at all. He got the AA enema. And then I go to my sponsor and go, what did I do? The second guy's sponsor was named Tim. Young redheaded Tim. His wife kicked him out of the house. His best friend moved in with the wife. You know how it goes. It's just when alcoholics drink together, you know. So he's sitting there at my house and he was just in bad shape. So I'm taking him through the steps. We were sitting in front of the 52-inch big screen TV. You know, it had to stand 4 feet away from the wall for the big cone in the back. And I said, you sit right there and tell those boys, sit right there. And we were watching My Name is Bill W., right, with James Garfield. And Garner. And I said, you sit there and you watch that. This is history. So we had the Gulf Coast Roundup, and I'm your sponsor. I'm going to buy you a ticket. So I bought him a ticket to the Gulf Coast Roundup. I said, I'll have you a seat in the front row. We're front row alcoholics, right? Sit in the front row. So Friday night, the meeting came. No Tim. I'm like, oh, where's he at? Saturday came, no Tim. Sunday morning meeting came, no Tim. So I said, he better be at his home group. Monday I went to Monday Night Big Book to the home group, no Tim. And I know what Tim is doing. And I didn't say a word to my sponsor. After the meeting, I dashed out, got in my car, drove over to his cottage. He lived down a cottage at the end of two gravel ruts. You could hear the truck coming. And I come down that gravel rut, and you could see that 25-inch color console glowing in the window. And I'm like, he's home. I shut the truck lights off, and those lights shut off. I'm like, oh, you going to hide from me? Oh. So I went and I'm, open that door. It's your sponsor. Wasn't funny then. He wouldn't open the door. I said, Tim, talk to me. He wouldn't talk to me either. He's in there hiding in this little one-room cottage efficiency. I'm like, dude, I could break this, you know. I got tools in the back of my truck. But I'm here to tell you, 30 minutes later, I was standing there crying. And I didn't know what to do about the feeling I had inside of me. So I went to the old-timer. I'll go to the old-timer. And I explained to him what happened. And he just smiled at me. He said, oh, Chip. He said, don't you understand what happened? I said, what? He said, evidently you had taken credit for his sobriety, and now you're taking credit for his drinking. Yep. How could you drink when I am your sponsor? So, fast forward, this guy asked me, I said, you've got 7 months less than me. I can't help you. So I run to the old timer. I said, what do I do? He said, Chip, he's not asking you to heal him. He's just asking you to help him. You see, he's watching you 7 months ahead of him. Go through the things that he's going to go through in 7 months. And he just wants you to grease the skids for him and pull him through. And I said, okay. So, what's this, Saturday? Monday night, I get to give him a 35-year medallion. The importance of sponsorship. Because, see, I had to get out of me. I had to get out of me. At 2.5 years sober, I was struck so angry and depressed and crying all the time. And I didn't know what was causing it. I was in a marriage that I did not want to be in anymore. And I was so afraid of hurting those children because I was afraid of them. I told my sponsor, they scare me. He said, well, tell them you're going through puberty and so are they at the same time. I didn't want to hurt the children by divorcing their mother. I didn't know what to do. I was in this situation, right? So I didn't want to tell anybody. And I'm thinking about drinking again. And I don't know what to do. So I come up with this idea. I said, I'm going to go out to my sponsor's house when he's not there. He had 40 acres. And I'm going to go out there and I'm going to get on that high dive at that little lake house that he had. I'm going to climb up on that high dive and I'm going to get as close as I can to God. And I'm going to do this third step prayer. Remember the one I did in the bathroom with the faucets, right? Because I need some relief right now. I need relief or I'm going to drink. I drank before. When it got bad, I will drink again. I know that. So I went out there, didn't tell anybody, ran out there to the farm. The horses watched me go by, chickens watched me go by. I climb up. If they would have been YouTubing it back then, I would have made it would have been a lot of hits on my film. It was precious, right? So I climb up on this high dive, and there I am, over the 6-acre lake. The clouds are white and fluffy, and I am in a lot of pain. So I open to page 63, and I recite that prayer again. And it's relieved me of the bondage of self. Take away my difficulties, because that's what was killing me. I didn't know what the difficulties were except fear, right? And I waited, because there's a promise in there. And it says, if honestly and humbly taken, an effect, sometimes a great one, is felt at once. This is the magic about learning to listen to your sponsor. So I sat there and waited, and nothing happened. I'm still in pain. I'm still crying. I'm still anxious, depressed. I'm just like all the bedevilments on page 52 are crawling up and down me. And I don't know what to do. And I thought, well, I remember when I was in Palm Springs and Johnny Harris got up there and there was 4,000 people in the audience. And he walked up to the podium and rapped one time. Bam! Instant silence. He said, we have commanded the attention of God to come into this meeting. And I'm like, everybody was like... So I thought, maybe that's what I need to do. So I raised my voice and commanded the attention of God, just like I had 600 troops on the battlefield. God! And I'm yelling this prayer out. And I'm thinking, this is going to get his attention. And I got done with that prayer, and I waited. Nothing happened. And I'm like, this crap doesn't work. I have got to the turning point. You've let me down. It doesn't work. Got down off the high dive. Went back up the hill. Now here's where the magic comes. I told my sponsor what I did. He's like, dude. He said, you went out to my house when I wasn't there. I said, well, I knew where Ann was. She was at the college. She wasn't there either. He said, you probably scared the horses and the chickens. He said, you climbed up on a high dive and you commanded the attention of God. And I said, yes, I did. He said, and you're telling me that you were that close to taking a drink. I said, yeah. And you were crying and you were bawling. This had been going on for a couple of weeks. And I said, yeah, man. He said, and you screamed everything that you had at God. I said, yeah. And he said, you're wondering what the deal is because you didn't think that an effect, sometimes a great one, is felt at once. I said, that's right. He said, let me ask you a question. Here it comes. He said, did you drink? I'm like, no, but what the hell has that got to do with it? And here's what he said. Were you looking for a Corvette? And I'm like, yes! I wanted tangible evidence that God worked him. He said, for an alcoholic to survive something like that and not drink is a miracle. He said, quit putting expectations on God's answers. And I'm like, all right. And I started notching another little lesson that's not wrinkles, it's scar tissue. Another little nut lesson got burned into place over and over and over again. I got divorced at year 10. The marriage could not survive me. The kids all understood what was going on. I stayed single, sober, and serene for a while. I started dating the girl that, Boy Meets Girl on AA campus? Yep. So I had 10 years. She had 6 months. Don't judge. My sponsor said, you can get a bad rep if you do this. I suggest if you're going to date, you do it under AA and Al-Anon double dating. You date with other recovery couples. Don't date alone. You'll get a reputation. If we did, we dated for 2.5 years. We got married, perfect marriage, bulletproof. Married at the sponsor's house by my brother, who was the justice of the peace, and my sister, who married Angie and I, right? The sponsor was there giving her away. It was that the sponsor's wife was throwing the rose petals. It was bulletproof. The whole home group was there. This could not fail. Fast forward to year 24. She walked into the house. I had a major heart attack. The Widowmaker. I had retired from the military. I had taken that business and just ramped it up. I mean, I ramped it up. Now I'm living next to the doctors and the lawyers in the gated communities. And if you would have walked by and you took my remote controls and did like this, boom, that would have been the Corvette and that would have been the Mercedes sports car. And I was looking good. And people would go, wow, he's a successful contractor. What they didn't see inside was at midnight I'm going... You know, they always say if you watch the lake and it's nice and calm and there's the swans going by, what you don't see is their little feet paddling like hell. And that's what I was doing, trying to keep up that facade. And I burned myself right into the Widowmaker heart attack. And then a few months later, she said, I love you, but I can't be married to you anymore. And then we got divorced. It was a crippling divorce. But my life changed because of all that stuff. My children watched me go through all this stuff. A former spouse was one to say, if you want to date somebody that's the same age as your children, go ahead. I said, she's not. She's 2 years older. Always stand your ground. Don't give them nothing. It was a good marriage. It was a good run while it lasted. We both parted ways. I went one direction. She went the other direction. I went into immense pain. I was like a caged tiger that was wounded, backed into the corner, just licking my wounds. Stay away from me. I disappeared. Now I'm 25 years sober. For 13 months, I disappeared. See, they had taken me to Clancy. When I got out of that divorce court, I got into my sponsor's truck. They took me to Panama City. I went to Panama City, and they said, something is askew. Remember that thing that Bill Wilson talks about. 13 years later, more will be revealed. Evidently, he saw a whole lot of us having unsuccessful relationships. We were having unsuccessful marriages, unsuccessful partnerships, unsuccessful relationships. And in that 13 years later, he put this magical phrase that wrote my story. It says, but it is from our twisted relations with family, friends, and society at large that many of us have suffered the most. We have been especially stupid and stubborn about them. And I'm like, whoa, Bill. The primary fact that we fail to recognize is our total inability to form a true partnership with another human being. That was me. So what did that mean in my life? If you liked me, I would hurt you. And if you loved me, I would hurt you and hurt you and hurt you until you left because you were getting too close. And they said, that is what is broken in you. Everything else you can just sit there and just run fine on. But you are broken when it comes to those items and relationships. So how'd they fix me, right? My story. We share our experience, strength, and hope. So we're going to take that big book and we're going to squeeze it a little bit. When it talks about the sixth step, as far as your defects of character, I want you to get this pad and write it down. Defects of character. They locked me in a hotel room. Defects of character. Things that I did I never should have done. And put numbers by them. I'm like, ooh. I got arrest records for stuff like that. When streaking was popular, never mind. It wasn't me. It was the guy in the cell with me. It was Key West. It should not have been on my record. Nothing counts in Key West in the 60s and 70s. Then take this pad of paper over here. For every number you got over here, put a number over here. Write down shortcomings. I said, oh, I've read the letter. Bill Wilson said, I meant the same thing. I just didn't want to use this same word twice. He said, for you, we're squeezing a little bit different. Put down things that I should have done instead of what I did over here. For everything that I found that I had defects of character on, now they were giving me a solution on how to fix it. And I didn't realize what they were doing. Line by line. What was I doing? I did the same thing I did when I drank. I made AA widows and AA orphans when I was drinking. And I'm making AA widows and AA orphans when I'm sober. You see, I'm the guy that's over at the Hawaii State Convention while the family's at home. I'm the guy traveling around the United States going to all these conventions. Families at home. I was no different in that aspect than I was when I was drinking. Nothing had changed. So he said, what would you do different? I said, I would spend more time with my family. More quality family time. Good. Item number two. We went down through every single item that I identified as a defect of character. Because if, and this is the reason I'm telling you this, if you take an inventory the way that I did, which is out of the big book, 3-column inventory, without talking to a sponsor about it, here's how it goes. I'm trying to find out in step 6 and 7 about my defects of character and shortcomings, right? What does the 3-column say? I am resentful at Mr. Brown, why, his attentions to my wife, and how it affects me. Sex, society, and fears. I'm still pissed at Mr. Brown. What have I done wrong? I don't have a defect of character in that. I'm just upset at Mr. Brown because of what he did. Sandy Beach, thank God, turned 2 pages. What does Sandy Beach say when you turn 2 pages? Well, if you go into here and it says, oh, highlighted in pink. Page 66, we turn back to the list for it held the key to the future. It's my 4-step list. We were prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle. Referring to our list again, We resolutely looked for our own mistakes. What had I done to start the ball rolling? And I'm like, man, I started every bit of that crap. Yeah, amen. So that's what, they just started launching me through the steps. I was working through the steps. I was going through all this stuff. I'm single, sober, and serene again at year 25. I'm sponsoring guys. I got my sponsor I'm staying active with. We're going to Agua. We're doing it all. The whole path. I'm single, sober, and serene, and swore off relationships, right? My picker sucks. I am out of it. I'm out of the game. So me and Big Al, the guy I'm giving a 35-year medallion to on Monday night, because we had history together. When we were young, sober together, we were having such problems. He had two kids. I had three kids. He had a wife. I had a wife. He had in-laws. I had in-laws. So we said, man, this is crazy. Our family life sucks. We go to all these different AA meetings, and we go to all these different functions because we can't stand being at home. Let's tell the truth. So we got tired of going to the old-timer because I didn't have the answer. Oh, let's go talk to the old-timer. We got tired of that because he kept giving us the truth. We're like, that sucks. We don't want to do that, right? So I'm just telling you my story. It's my story, right? So I said, here's what we're going to do. We made a deal. You and I are going to be the very best husbands and fathers we can be for 1 week. We're going to step out of our box. And if you want to yell at your wife, you call me and I'll justify it if it's needed. And if I want to yell at mine, I got to call you and you justify it if you think it's needed. And we will work together on this stuff so we don't have to go to the old timer. And at the end of the week, we'll get together and we'll line up our report cards. We were the best. I mean, we were intense. There was a lot of phone calls and we were like, but we did not yell. Well, we finally told our wives about it, and they said, we were wondering what the hell was going on. We had the best week we ever had in our entire life. And I'm like, why do we got to work all the steps and they improve? Why do we have to do all the work? And he said, well, I really don't think they changed a bit. But maybe your perception and your attitude and outlook upon them have changed because you behaved a little better. And as I behaved better, I started learning better. So the lessons that I learned and all that stuff, me and Big Al swore to each other, we were done with relationships. I had just gotten out of mine. He had gotten out of his. We had gone through the steps together again under guidance. And we were prepared for the launch off of this new adventure about being single, sober, and serene. If you've heard Angie's story, Amanda made a phone call and said for me to come to Flint River Roundup, although I wasn't supposed to be there. My sponsor had been trying to get me to take him to Flint River Roundup, but I said, I can't. After 13 months, where they had found me was I had a lake house. I had a house on an island in the middle of a lake in Dufuniak Springs, Florida. One way on, the two-rut causeway. And when they came out there and found me, see, I was disappearing all over the place, and thank God for social media, right? Because my sponsor, the old-timer, would go, hey, man, you seen Chip? And Al would go, yeah, I seen him on Facebook. Well, where's he at? He's flying a helicopter in Hawaii, looking at rainbows, trying to get spiritual. I was off the cuff, right? Got into another relationship with a non-recovery person, Chardonnay drinker. So they reeled me back in. They brought me back in. I'm moving back at home, and I can't go to Flint River Roundup. And here's the magic of what happens. Lest we plan our lives and God laughs. I said, I can't go to Flint River because you told me to move back home. I got painters in my house. My daughter's in charge of the paint scheme. She's trying to do it like Key West. There's 8 different colors going on. I got Tabasco orange bathrooms. I am not going to Flint River and leaving them alone with my house. You get Steve, the new guy, to take you. And I told him no. And Amanda, Angie's daughter, called up. And she said, I need you at Flint River. And I'm like, oh, you want me to speak? And she said, no, Chip, I need you to read. I'm like, oh. She said, bring a suit because you'll be up at the podium. I said, okay. And she said, and by the way, my mama's going to be there. And I'm like, ooh, cool. Because we had known each other for 14 years. So I showed up at Flint River Roundup because Amanda locked into me like a pit bull. If you know Amanda, she does not give up easy, right? She said, I am not asking you anymore. This is now an AA request. And I said, that's a foul. You can't pull that card. You cannot say no to an AA request. So there I went. And we had that photo taken on stage, right? And 100 days later, I'm on my knees at Jacksonville Beach at the pier asking her to marry me and had the photographers hidden. And they videotaped the whole thing, right? Still got a videotape. Took a whole series of photos. And my parents were waiting at the Italian restaurant with all the rest of the family. I said, why are y'all waiting at the Italian restaurant? In case she says no. That's possible? Because they had fallen in love with her. So anyhow, our lives, we got, you know, this is how it works. If you're new, hold on, because this is a rocket ride, right? You look at each other, you make one text, 180 days later, you're married on the beach. It just happens that I didn't get a 6-month chip, I got a wedding ring, right? And so does she. When you know, you know. It just, why waste time, right? We've known each other for a long time. Now we're morphing it together. Her sponsor said, Chip's got 26 years. You got 24 years. That's 50 years together. You ought to be able to make this thing work. And we have. Been a lot of ups and downs. A lot of ups and downs. We talked about it today as far as the COVID situation that went through. I went through a bunch of medical stuff. It was crippling to me. I went through 5 major surgeries in 14 months with anesthesia that I was not used to. 5 bouts of anesthesia, 5 bouts of ventilator tubes, 5 bouts of oxycodone, pain relievers. They rebuilt my shoulder. They ripped my carotid arteries out. And then I had the major heart attack right at the onset of COVID. That has an effect on a relationship. There's no denying that. Everything starts shifting and changing. She became, instead of a wife, she became a caregiver and a wife. I couldn't take showers by myself. I couldn't walk. They had to teach me to walk again. Everything changed. Everything changed. I started going through these panic attacks. I started going through personality changes. I started waking up in night sweats. I started soaking the bed. I was a nightmare in tremors. The shadow people had come back. And she said, I had not known you while you drank, but I have heard your story so many times and known you so long. It sounds like you're becoming the person that used to drink. My personality started shifting back. In our book, it says, be quick to see where men of religion and medicine are right. So I called my sober surgeon up that did all the surgeries on me, and I said, I am in deep trouble. I'm in deep trouble. He got me to a psychologist. They got me to a trauma therapist. They started doing EMDR therapy on me. They found out what had happened to me with my traumas when I woke up in the cardiac unit. My body was stapled back together again with hog staples. It took me to a different level of who I was and what I thought I was. The mortality issue. And I was afraid, you know. I lost my father. I lost my youngest son. I lost my sponsor all in 1 year. I left that sponsor at 28 years sober. When Angie and I got married, I moved to a lot of y'all know Jerry and Jill from Jacksonville. They were recorders. And I went to him because he started taking me on a whole new level of where I needed to go as far as the God syndrome and stuff. I got confused about it. Same. Remember I told you, I said, oh, I know all about God. I went to the parochial school. My parents made me go to church and stuff. I got nailed so hard that I lost my contact with God. When it talks about a conscious contact with God, it doesn't mean constant. It says conscious contact. And I got struck in a place when I was 28 years sober, or 29 years sober. I had lost that I'd lost a switch. I knew the power was there. I knew the lights would come on if I could only find a switch, but I lost a switch. I was groping in the dark, and I didn't know what to do. So Jerry, we talk about computer stuff. Who was talking about God? What was it? God 1.0 or AA 1.0?
Becky.
I wish he was here. I was going to give my God 8.0 story, right? Very quick. Jerry looked at me, he says, you've lost your contact with God. I said, I don't know how to get it back. I've tried working the steps. I've tried doing everything you asked me to do. You're my new sponsor. What do I do? He said, let's go on a search. He said, I will take you on the same search I went through when it happened to me. And I'm like, God, I'm not alone. I'm not alone. Why do people leave Alcoholics Anonymous? Why do they disappear with 30 years sober, 40 years sober, 25 years sober? They fail to ask for help. That's what I found out. So he said, I will help you. And he took me on this journey. He said, I'm going to ask you to read these conference-approved books. I'm going to ask you to read non-conference-approved books. I'm going to take you deep on this search for God. And what it was an exercise called the practice of the presence of God. I had to walk outside and look at the sun and say, thank you, God. I had to look at the grasshopper and go, thank you, God. I had to look at the blade of the grass going, thank. I had to reboot my entire concept of what God was. And it started to work. And I started to be able to climb all through that stuff. Jerry was an amazing man. Ended up with a terminal lung disease. He warned all 15 of us that he sponsored. We're at his house on Zoom meetings from Destin to Jacksonville. 15 of us all together from around, from Nebraska. He said, I'm getting ready to die. I'm going to take my wife back. I know this is going fast, but this God thing is important to me. He ran it up there. He said, I'm going to die and you guys need to be prepared. And this is the guy that took me on the journey for God and led me to find it again. I found the switch again. And I'm like, you're going to leave. You know, he's 45 years sober. And I'm like, what do I do? He said, you got to prepare yourself. So I did. I started not interviewing. I started thinking about people that I would want to ask to be my sponsor. And what I do is I disregard the amount of years they got. I focus on quality, on the quality of their sobriety and how they walk the walk and talk the talk, quiet mind and peaceful heart. So I'm standing next to the guy that was my sponsor for 28 years in Jackson, Mississippi at the Old Timers Roundup. And we're standing there with 350 other people and the phone rings. And I answer the phone and it's my wife. And she says, I don't want you to see this on Facebook, but your sponsor just died. And I said, thank you. I love you. And the original sponsor said, what happened? I said, Jerry just died. He said, oh, man. I got on the phone and I'm like, hello, Tim. Would you be my sponsor? He said, I would always love to carry you and continue on the same mission that Jerry had you on. So Tim has been my sponsor ever since then. We have intimate talks together. I bring him up to speed. Because if I'm going to ask somebody to help me, I better tell them what's killing me. The secrets. The secrets that 35 years sober. It's all getting one-on-one. You know, I could talk to the guy that I sponsor about all that stuff, but it's something different and intricate when it's your sponsor. And you know that it's like they originally told me. He said, you're going to tell me secrets, and I'm going to tell you secrets. We're going to share a fist step. I'm going to reach in, I'm going to pinch your heart a little bit, and you're going to reach in, you're going to pinch mine. And we will hold each other's secrets, and we call that love. And that's what we do in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I have been so blessed to have men in my life like that, and women in my life like that, that abide by these traditions and abide and they go through the steps and they sponsor people and they help people. And when it's your turn for you to get up here and tell your story, I'll be sitting in the front row. Thank you very much.